The Walls of Inix. So that's coming up for us in just a moment here on CITR 101.9 FM. So sit back, relax, and begin your Victoria Day weekend with a little bit of spoken word entertainment.
Do you like friends? Well, we like you. So become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, but it gets you all kinds of deals with our friends on Commercial Drive, like 10% off at Stormcrow Tavern, High Life Records, Audio Pile, Mintage Clothing, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
Nocturne Boulevard.
Nocturne Boulevard? Not far. When you hit Howard, hang a right. Howard meets Philip at a weird kind of angle. You can't miss Nocturne. It's just past the Ottoman.
19 Nocturne Boulevard. Your address for suspenseful stories of the speculative, strange, and supernatural. Tonight's story is Within the Walls of Eric's, and was adapted from a story by H.P. Lovecraft and Kenneth Sterling.
Yes, this is 19 Nocturne Boulevard. Won't you step inside? Did you have any trouble finding it? What do you mean, what kind of a place is it? Would you believe it's a mining camp on the steamy jungle planet we call Venus?
Six, day 14, nighttime. Kenton J. Stanfield. Perhaps my final report. My fifth whole day. Canteen went dry at noon. Food tablets not dangerously low yet. Chlorate cubes are my real worry. Feel weak from my forced economy and oxygen and my constantly mounting thirst.
You're still using Carter oxygen units? But they're so darn heavy.
Budget's God around here, kid. You'll see. We're not funded like the government.
A Dubois mask isn't that much more and does the job at half the weight. Saves on chlorate cubes, too.
Just figure out how much not much more is when multiplied by over 100 prospectors. If you last up here, you can always get yourself a Dubois once you start making the big bucks.
The way you say that...
Oh, it happens. Just not that often.
I do not know the time. It is dark. There's something damnable, something uncanny about this labyrinth. I could swear that I had eliminated certain turns through charting, and yet each new trial belies some assumption I thought established. Never before did I realize how lost we are without visual landmarks.
Hey, Greenhorn! This is your contact, Dana Manor, speaking. That's Miss Manners to you. You got me for a glorious half hour.
What? Why only...
None of you boys ever crack a manual. The company's only rebroadcast orbiter is a... Well, it's a dang fast critter. So it provides a window for 1 half hour approximately every 6 hours for each sector. And that's your first 5 minutes. Care to waste some more, or do you plan on making some kind of report?
Sorry. Okay, my coordinates.
Goodness! Did you bring your blankie, too? All that boring info is sent up automatic-like.
But my log, too?
Nah, it takes too much juice. This way you get to edit out all your little personal comments and naughty little secrets before handing it over for archiving.
Oh, good.
So, you one of those boys who grew up just panting to work on Venus?
Actually, I wanted to be a writer. Venus just pays better. Now it seems like a...
You got hustled out the Bay soggy ground? He ain't the first. Here's your mask, grab your seat, what's your hurry?
Pretty much.
Continued. The effect of all these fruitless wanderings is one of profound discouragement. I can understand how poor Dwight must have felt. His corpse is now just a skeleton, and the Sophocles and Farnoth flies are gone.
It's all about the crystals, kid. You read the manual?
Well...
You had an entire rocket trip?
Well, there was this poker game.
Oh, save me from greenhorns with less sense than kittens. That book could have saved your life, you know.
Well, I figure there'd be time.
There's never enough time. Men who can withstand the strains of crystal hunting here on Venus are few and far between. Most, like yourself, last no more than 3 trips.
What makes you think?
Prove me wrong.
Hey, Miller!
See that? Now, there's a guy who knows his beans.
Miller, read it and weep. 23 carats.
23? That's...
Right there in black and white. Beat that.
Oh, Kit, this is Dwight, Fred Dwight, one of the brightest stars in Terra Nova Corp.
The brightest star. Ken, is it? Well, Ken, there ain't no one else out there that's netted as many total lifetime carats as me. Over 700.
Oh, I don't...
Kid, skip the manual.
Okay. It takes about 20 carats to power, say, the entire city of Chicago for a year. Shoot, by my calculations, I've kept the entire eastern seaboard lit for the last 5.
Nightfall. There's nothing to do but persevere. Dwight would have got out if he'd kept on a minute longer. It's just possible that somebody from Terra Nova will come looking for me before long. Although this is only my 4th day out.
Soup fit okay? Last chance.
Feels fine.
With that tropical atmosphere out there, you better be sure... 5 days is a long damn time to chafe.
I understand. I'm sure. So my tour is 5 days.
To start with. You remember Dwight? Well, there's a long hauler. Does about 2 months, Earth months, 60 days, on most trips.
2 tablets, 1 week.
But then he's been Cytherian for over a decade.
Cytherian?
Means Venus to us long-timers. We feel Venusian sounds too damn silly after all the crummy movies.
Breathing unit?
Cytherian. Got it.
Dwight's practically one of the locals. You seen him yet?
Fluorite cubes. 1 week.
Only pictures. Now, that part of the manual I did look over. Whew, creepy little buggers, aren't they?
A little? Ken, you didn't look hard enough. On average, the lizard men run 7 feet tall.
Holy!
Recording unit?
Don't worry too much. They're not harmless. Not by a long shot, but they're manageable.
So those tentacles they've got for arms?
Crystal detector?
Arms, legs, tongue. Who knows what they are? Yep, 4 or 5 feet long on some of them. We call them lizard men, what with the greenish, scaly skin and all. But they're not really like anything back home.
7 feet tall.
Flame pistol, fully charged.
Four days out, I think. I'm resolved not to hasten matters as Dwight did. His grinning skull has just turned toward me, shifting by the groping of one of the scavengers that are picking him over. The ghoulish stare of its empty eye sockets is worse than the tentacled onlookers that stand gloating around the invisible barrier, laughing at me. Another day and I'll go mad if I don't drop dead from exhaustion. You still there, Miss Manners?
Just another couple minutes. What's your beat?
I've got a reading on my crystal detector. It looks like a big one.
Them things aren't reliable for size, just direction. Could be just a beat of anyone real nearby.
Well, what's the terrain like north, I think, of my current position?
North? I city in Highlands. Last known position.
Great. On my own again. Recorder?
Ready.
A recent in Highlands.
Map from Mexico from the air 50 years ago. Designated Eryx. One of the few areas of Tizon Venus noted for a lack of vegetation.
Off. Lack of vegetation? That'll be a relief. Anything to get out of those rubbery creepers and overhanging fronds. Month 6, day 12. My third day out. Afternoon. In less than an hour, I saw that the jungle growths were thinning out, and by 5 o'clock, after passing through a belt of tree ferns with very little underbrush, I emerged on a broad plateau. Progress now became rapid, and I saw by the wavering of my detector needle that I was getting closer to the crystal I sought.
Some brainy types insist they're intelligent.
The Lizzies? Screwballs.
Well, they build cities.
Anthills, beehives. We don't try to make trees with bugs, do we?
But they talk, don't they?
That's been debated for years. There seem to be some patterns of the tentacle movement.
Yeah, and bees dance. I've been out there longer than just about anyone, and they're nothing but a damn nuisance.
A religious nuisance.
So they worship the crystals, big deal. They can't use them, and don't even know they do anything more than glow. If we want to change things, we got about 2 real choices.
Yeah, try and civilize them, like we did with everyone back home.
Nah, they're way too primitive for that. I say we either got to cage them up like the animals they are.
We've tried that one before.
We can just blow them away. Why not? They're not decorative, useful, or even edible. They don't do anything worth keeping them around.
Note to self. Day 4th. 4th day. I racked my brains with speculations regarding the material origin and purpose of this strange edifice. At the hands of men might have reared it, I could not for a moment believe. Human knowledge does not include any perfectly transparent, non-reflective solid such as the substance of this building. Did a forgotten race of highly evolved beings precede the man-lizards as masters of Venus? A strange and seemingly non-practical building and its materials suggests a religious purpose. Contact. You back yet? Manners? Damn. This is just nuts. What the heck is this stuff? Smooth, cool to the...
Contact here, report!
Have I got a report for you? Oh, I found an invisible wall. Fifth day out. I doubt we'll see sixth. Very weak. Did not sleep much till daylight. Must save Corey cubes. So I'm nearly suffocating. Lack of oxygen. Can't walk much of the time, but manage a crawl. It's damnable. Green things keep staring, laughing with their tentacles. Sometimes they gesticulate the way makes me think they share some terrible joke just beyond my perception.
Listen to me real careful now, kid. You need to close your eyes and start backing up right this minute.
What? My recording unit lists nothing about an invisible wall.
You backing up yet? Ignore anything you see or hear.
Why, for crying out loud?
Make yourself clear first, then check your recorder's entry for mirage plans. Move your backside. Them things are deadly.
Wait. No. Wait a minute. I'm in the middle of the plains of Eryx. No plants within a half mile. Nothing to see but mud and...
Yeah? Mud and...
The walls.
But you can't see them because they're invisible. Third day supplemental. What made my heart leap was a smaller detail whose position could not have been far from the plane's exact center. It was a single point of light blazing through the mist and seeming to draw a piercing, concentrated luminescence from the yellowish, vapor-dulled sunbeams. This, without doubt, was the crystal I sought. I could hardly wonder, as I glimpsed the distant glow, like those miserable mant lizards worship them. Maybe 20 feet tall. Managed to throw a handful of mud about that high and it went over.
I ain't got any maps or archives with specifics for that locale. Not a popular spot, seeing as there's none of the streams them crystals show up in.
No streams, but plenty of dam. The whole plateau is like a solid sheet of slimy mud with a light frosting and ground mist.
Couldn't this wall thing be some kind of natural phenomenon?
Too smooth. Very regular. Slightly curved too, I think. Oh boy.
You riders and your big old words. Been all the way around yet?
I don't think so, but I can't really tell.
Well, did you hit your own dainty little footsteps again?
Not a chance. The mud is so liquid it just doesn't take, not even for a minute. It's like I haven't been here before.
I need you to mark your position and come back to base camp. This is way outside standard procedure. You hear me?
Got it. I'll get out of here pretty soon. I just want to get all the way around just once.
Honey, I'll be flat out of range in two shakes. I don't want to worry you none, but if anything happens out there, it could be days before help will arrive.
Days? No, but a lander would only...
Manpower and money, old son. Base only has a dozen resident staff, and none of us is jungle worthy. We gotta wait for some of you roughnecks to wander on home. Then the company has to pay for their time for a rescue. Why do you think they load jet with plenty of ammo? Much cheaper.
It's a wonder they bother.
And death benefits.
What?
They're cheaper, too.
Horror and despair. Baffled again. I've been deceived once more. Was apparently back where I'd been on my first futile attempt to leave the labyrinth. Whether I screamed aloud, I do not know. Perhaps I was too weak to utter a sound. I merely lay dazed in mud for a long period, while the greenish things outside leaped in and laughed and gestured. Isn't this a lot of ammo? I mean, 7 clips.
One a day, that's pretty average. Save them for the trip home. The Lizzies don't usually try much right away. That is, until you got one of their precious crystals. The worst you can expect before you make a find is pot shots with blowgun darts.
Blowguns? That's it?
Don't scoff. One of those darts will slice through your suit like butter. All it needs to do is nick you and the local germs do the rest, if the insects don't get you first. If you don't get back to base in time, well, you notice the bartender's hand?
The hook?
Uh-huh.
Late afternoon, third day. It was said that even from a great distance, the shining object's position seems indefinably queer. A slight mound rising from the slime and mist. Now, at about 100 yards, I could see plainly just what that mound was. It was the body of a man in one of the company's protective suits lying on his back, with his oxygen mask half buried in the mud a few inches away. His right hand, crushed convulsively against his chest, was the crystal that led me here. A spheroid of incredible size, so large that the dead fingers could scarcely close over it. I wondered who the man was. Holy cow! Dwight? Oh, jeez. But the walls... How could he... Whoa!
There was an opening about 3 feet wide. Without a moment's hesitation, I stepped through and advanced 2 paces to the prostrate body. I just lay in what seemed to be an intersecting doorless corridor. It gave me a fresh curiosity to find that the interior of this vast enclosure was divided by partitions.
I hope I die out here.
You want to die?
No, I don't want to. Just that when I do, I hope it's out there in the jungle. The scavengers will strip me clean in a couple of hours. No one will ever know what happened.
Just make sure you're dead first. Some of them bugs don't wait.
Will they really?
That's why the suits are made the way they are. Like cellophane, but thicker. No weave, no tiny holes for bugs to get in through.
But the suit doesn't cover everything.
Nah, they don't like the breather. Smells bad or something. So your head is pretty safe, as long as you don't take it off.
Looking about for some possible cause of death, my eyes lit upon the oxygen mask lying close to the body's feet. Probably carelessly buckled, so the weight of the tubes worked the strap loose. Wouldn't have happened with the Dubois sponge reservoir mask. Well, Dwight, old buddy, you got your wish. At least this baby won't go to waste. Let go. Wait a minute. Wait, rigor mortis, it doesn't last. Manners, you there? Recorder?
Ready.
Rigor mortis.
A condition of deceased breath. A spasming of muscles.
How long does it last?
Rigor mortis begins 3 to 7 hours after the termination of life and lasts approximately 12 hours.
Off. Holy. Dwight. What, Sam Hill? It was a group of a dozen or so of those detestable man-lizards emerging from the forest far off across the plain. When they drew nearer, they seemed less truly reptilian, only the flat head and the green, slimy, frog-like skin carrying out the idea. They walked erect on odd, thick stumps, which made curious noises in the mud. The motions of their tentacles, if the theories are right, indicated that the things were in animated conversation.
You asleep?
Would it matter?
You sound real down. Tell Mama Manners all about it. You may not have a lot of time, though. There's some sunspot activity predicted for tonight, so I may have to miss a date or two, but you can forgive a girl for that, can't you?
I'm lost.
Nonsense. You know we're near uncharted territory. Just punch into the recorder.
Oh, I know exactly where I am, but I'm still lost.
Is this where I start telling you to back away quickly?
The invisible wall? Well, it's more like...
Like what? An invisible bar?
An invisible maze. I can see the entire plain from here. The trees are at the edges, the sky above, but I can't get out.
Have you tried taking every left fork? That usually...
Something else. There's a crowd of the lizardmen just waiting at the entrance, ready to jump me if I manage to escape.
Two things.
I need some help.
Ain't gonna happen. Not for a couple days. Sunspots play havoc with land and vehicles, same as communications.
So I just...
Listen to me, Ken. You never tried shooting one of them things, have you? The flame guns are particularly nasty. Them critters go up like oily rags. Once you get one or two of them, the others will head for the hills. They don't really want to fight.
There is. Until you got one of them precious crystals.
Oh. No.
No? No what?
I'm not giving it up.
That's the spirit, Ken. But long as you're in a safe place, just sit tight and get a rescue party in as soon as possible.
You mean other prospectors, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I will be out of here by then. Fourth day, shortly after dawn. The alluring crystal, the body of a man who seized it before me, these have acquired a dark and threatening meaning. Dwight was a victim, too. He must have been trapped some time ago and failed to find his way out. His mask probably didn't slip accidentally. Rather than face a lingering death, he resolved the issue by letting the lethal atmosphere do its work. The horrible irony of his fate lay in his position. Only a few feet from the exit, he failed to find. Now I'm as trapped as he'd been. Recorder.
Ready.
Location, central chamber. Describe.
Round chamber. 6 irregularly spaced egresses.
Progress.
You have 27 clients attempted the exit you designated door in line with corpse and tree.
Yeah, well, then I realized 3 of the doors all lined up that way. There's just not enough difference in perspective.
You have recorded 43 trips out of the central chamber.
I know. With no way to mark anything, I can't tell which door is which.
You have attempted to score the wall with your knife and with your flame pistol. You've tried to make a mark in ink and smear it with mud. You have reported no success.
Picking a damn door at random would do me more good.
Correlating the turns you have thus far recorded, random choice would give you odds of 1 in...
Off.
This, then, is the end. 3 days taking me nowhere. Strength is gone. There was no common series of mischances which made me lose my way in this ruthless, unseen tangle of horrors. Front. Beyond doubt, the place is genuine maze. A labyrinth. Traps set to catch humans. Hiya, Twyatt. Hey, buddy. You got it all over me. You almost made it, old pal. Almost. Recorder on.
Right.
Just taken the great crystal out of my pouch to look at it in my last moments. It shines fiercely, menacingly, in the red rays of a dying day. The leaping horde have noticed it, and their gestures changed in a way I cannot understand. I am growing numb.
Operative A-49, Kenton J. Stanfield, left Terra Nova early on 6-12 for a short-term trip. Due back 13th or 14th, did not appear by evening of 15th. Followed last reported location to Aracidian Highland, brought plane down nearby and corner of the wing crashed on unseen obstruction. Approaching on foot, we came up short against a smooth, invisible barrier. Located skeleton of Operative B-9, Frederick N. Dwight, of Koenig's division, and aforementioned deceased Stanfield. We had great difficulty in getting to Stanfield, but finally succeeded. We shall bury Dwight and Stanfield in the company graveyard and ship the crystal on the next off. Miller?
I heard.
Yeah.
And I'm real sorry. Boy, seemed real nice.
He was. Keep it under your hat. But I think this is the last straw.
Last straw?
I've been warned. The next rocket will be carrying Marines.
Oh, well, I am sorry.
Yeah. Recorder on.
Right.
A personal note. I am impressed not only with the irony of Dwight's fate, but with that of Stanfield as well. We found a doorway some 15 feet past Dwight. Beyond this was a hall and... Ah, hell. Stanfield could have reached the outside by walking 22 feet if he had just found the opening directly behind him.
Yeah.
Now that you know how to find us, don't be a stranger. We have enough of those already. Tonight's production of Within the Walls of Eryx was adapted for radio by Julie Hoverson from a short story by H.P. Lovecraft and Kenneth Sterling. In tonight's production, Kenton Stanfield was Renaud Leboeuf. Frederick Dwight was Cole Hornaday. Marshall Miller was Pat McNally. Dana Manners was Julie Hoverson. The supply clerk was Marge Lutton. And the recorder was Beverly Poole. All music in this production is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Post-production and mastering is done by Julie Hoverson. This show is copyright 2008 to Julie Hoverson and Reality Productions. This has been a joint presentation of Reality Productions and ART, American Radio Theater.
Man.
What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo, man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow,
that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. Okay, dude. We get it.
Dude!
Only on CITR.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
Was I born as a slave? More than 150 years in the past, with a power I do not fully understand. I am known as Jean-Pierre Desperrois, and Destiny, she calls my name. But why, you ask? Why do you think you are so special, Jean-Pierre? Why do you believe that you've been selected for a higher destiny than the rest of us? The rest of us, we live our lives day by day. We do our best to obtain food, shelter, clothing for ourselves and for our loved ones. Perhaps we put away a little something or another for the future, but that is all. Why do you believe you are so special? Why indeed, mon ami? Why indeed? Part 1. The Destroying Sword. Chapter 1. Bois Caïman. The slaves of A.T. have an affinity with the dark, no? Even in torchlight, we are invisible, except for our teeth and our eyes. And those can only be seen if the light catches them just so. On the night of the new moon, even the sharpest eyes will miss us, and it is on just such a night that I am born. The night of the 14th of August, in the year 1791. But perhaps you wonder about the truth of what I tell you. How can a man speaking to us today, not particularly old, have been born in the past more than 200 years? It is a very good question. Hold it in your mind because I will address it later, eh? The important fact right now is this date. 14 August 1791. You know this date, huh? Or perhaps not. Perhaps the place will, shall we say, jog your memory? The place is Bois Caïman. Now you know. Or not. Google it if you do not know. Close your eyes for a moment and envision this place. Bois Caïman. The forest of the alligator. In a clearing, the canopy of trees blocks out what light the stars might give. In the center of the clearing, a single tree, le poteau mitin. It is très chaud, no? It is, what is the word, muggy, heavy, like soup. Even at night, even standing perfectly still, you drip with sweat. But we are not still. Mambo Mayene, Ungan Bukma, and a small group of slaves gather in the darkness around Le Poteau Mitin. Two men and one woman, I do not recall their names, beat a slow rhythm on their drums. The rest of the group throbs in time with their rhythm. The rest, that is, except Azélie Danto, who, in her state, cannot dance but lies moaning on the damp ground. Tonight, the revolution, it is to begin, and this ritual of sacrifice, it is to enlist the help of the loi, and help they will. For this revolution will become, for the slaves of Haiti, freedom, no? The only revolution of slaves to succeed in the history of the world. And the person who has worked without stop to bring this revolution to life? Azélie Danto. Azélie Danto, a woman of great destiny, no? And for her effort, she herself will become loi. But you know that part already. What is less well known? Is the fact that Azélie Danto, she bore a child that night. But it is a strange thing, no? To carry a child at the age of 64 years? Most women of Haiti at this time, they do not live past the age of 40 years. So, my maman, she is an old woman, far too old to be a mama. No? Far too old even to be alive. But that is where you are wrong. With the loi, anything is possible. Look at your own good book. Was not the mother of Isaac 100 years of age when she became a mother? Did not Noah live to be 950 years? And with my maman, the loi, they were most certainly involved. That is the power of the loi. The loi, they will bring about an entire revolution of slaves, no? They will remove the hated French from this island forever, no? So, it is but a small thing for my maman to grow me in her womb as an old woman at the age of 64 years. But even so, at her age, in her condition, my mama lies still, moaning on the damp ground. All the eyes, those of Bukman, Mayenne, the drummers, these eyes are on a black animal. Every time I visit the scene, the animal changes. A pig, a rooster, a goat, a bull. But always this animal, it is black. Black for the Petwolwa Legba. Black for the spirits of vengeance. The Ungan places the food before this creature to see whether it wants to be sacrificed. It eats, a good sign. The Mambo dips her hand into a pouch at her waist and takes powder from it. She sprinkles the powder on the ground next to the Poteau Mitin. The one large cross, then the four small crosses, then the rest of the vive of the Diable Petrolois Legba. Sometimes, this powder, it is flour. Sometimes it is sand, but tonight it is always gunpowder. For the task at hand requires power. More power than the usual substance can provide. Ungan Bukman pulls out the sword of Laplace, the sacrificial knife Kubasa. The drummers, they drum faster. Ungan Bukman holds the animal from behind and slices the throat. The drums beat faster yet. The small crowd bobs to the rhythm. Bukman lifts up the creature above my maman, so weak that she lies on the ground, and tells her to drink the warm blood from the wound as it drips upon her face. To drink in honor of the Diabetwo Lua Legba. In the name of Ba, in the name of Don, in the name of La. Then Bukman strikes the sacrifice against the ground 3 times. Ke ekul malegba kutyo. When the first drop hits the lips of my maman, her back arches, and though her eyes are still closed, she stands up straight for the first time in weeks, in years. When she has risen, she alone among the people gathered in this place on this night, encircling her and the Potomitain, she alone is perfectly still. The drums, they beat faster. The mambo leads the chant.
Atibon legba! L'ouvri barrier pour moi!
The others join in.
Et vos pas, l'ouvri barrier pour moi! L'ouvri barrier pour que je rentre! Toi les pas, l'ouvri barrier pour moi! Sonnera, sonnera, réveillez vos pas!
The gunpowder, bébé, bursts into flame, blinding everyone. Behind the flames, my maman, she opens her eyes and she begins to speak. But the voice, it is not their own. It is the voice of a man. But now we are at the crossroad, and now in Tunis, no? As far east as a man with my color skin can go without being noticed. Tunis, 1931. A good city to pass along unnoticed. A good city in which to do business. A good city in which to live and to die. It is here that I keep my present home, though the words home and present have no true meaning to me these days, no? What am I doing here, you ask? I like this place. The parks and the boulevard, the mosque, the markets, the minarets. It is a beautiful city with a rich history. It was once known as Carthage before it was smashed to the earth by the Empire of the Romans. You know this legend, no? But it is no legend. It is real. Yes, I have no love for the French, but I have learned to keep my friends close and my enemies closer. And I am drawn to the east, always to the east. So this place is a good place for me. The 29th day of January, 1931. I sit at my table in Marat's tavern by the docks. The room smells of stale beer and old ashtrays. This time of day, between breakfast and lunch on a Thursday, most tables, they are empty. But today, they are all empty. Marat herself tends the bar, but she reads the newspaper, La Tunisie Française. My table is in the far corner, nestled in the shadows. It is how it always is for me, no? Nestled in the shadows. Madame Marat does me the kindness of providing a screen to separate my table from the rest of the room. Why? She likes me.
Why? I prefer not to say. This morning I will sit with our local gendarme, Michel Dupuy. I have for you some advice. Sit with a drink in front of you, but do not drink it. Let people believe you are drinking, but really, you are listening. And so it goes with Monsieur Gendarme Dupuy. He walks into the tavern and straight to the bar. Madame Arras, she is used to this behavior from this man, and she is already pouring his glass of whiskey. Not the first glass for him this morning, no. He takes the glass from the bar without even one word to say merci. Marat makes a show of tearing up the bill as he walks to my table. For this favor, perhaps he will turn a blind eye to some of the business that sometimes gets done at her place, no? But that is none of my problem. Monsieur Dupuy, I say, as he sits right on time. But of course, Jean-Pierre, do you expect anything less of me? When it comes to taking my money, of course not. And I hand him a paper bag heavier than it looks. Merci, Jean-Pierre. Do rien. We each play our part, no? I'm merely a bit actor in this drama, I'm afraid. Perhaps, but you get paid like a star, no? Touché! And today my small part in your drama is to offer you a unique business opportunity. I believe this money pays you to stay out of my business, no? Let's just say that every player, no matter how small, enjoys the chance to ad-lib a little every now and then. Stick to the script, I say. Since when are you interested in the details of my business? Is casual, is smiling, is a twinkle in his dark and beady eye. Oh, this is special, Jean-Pierre. I trust this man the way I trust a scorpion to bear me across a river. Are you interested in hearing more? Hearing more? Oui. But beyond that, not so much. Well, Jean-Pierre, I presume you've heard about the recent unrest in the Sudan? Oui. This recent unrest has forced a large number of young ladies from their homes. So I am told. Some of these young ladies have been, shall we say, collected up by some enterprising businessmen who wish to transport these ladies to new homes elsewhere in Africa and perhaps to Europe. New homes? These girls will provide an important, shall we say, service wherever they end up. I am sure they will. With visas and travel papers being so difficult to come by these days, these men have come to me to help them with their good work. So naturally, I thought of you.
Naturally?
There's good money in it, I'm sure,
he says. I'm sure, I say.
We sit for a moment. He leans forward in his chair, gulps down some of their whiskey. His lips twist into a smug grin. I do not want to think of how much these enterprising young men, as he would say, have offered them to expand their trade. I trade in salt, monsieur, I say. Not human beings. Oh, yes. And Algeria is all the more free for it, I am sure.
I look at him with blankness.
That's too bad. These days it seems that human beings are Tunis's leading commodity.
He leans back and pours the final drops of his whiskey into his open mouth. Then, as if it is nothing, he says,
Oh, yes, there is one tidbit that may be of interest to you. Two of your race were found dead in the desert this morning.
Anyone I know?
The victims or the murderer?
I shrug my shoulders.
No, the victims were not from Tunis. We have no idea who the murderer was. Though, if you do know him, I'm sure we would be grateful if you told us.
And how does this fact interest me? He smiles. He holds up his empty glass as if there is something fascinating on the inside of it, which there is not.
What's interesting, Jean-Pierre?
He says, examining is glass. What's interesting is not the mere fact that they died. I'm sure you'd agree that that's not interesting at all. No, what's interesting is the way in which they died. I do not answer her. Just to look at him as if I do not really find the topic to be interesting at all, which in most ways I do not. He is clearly waiting for me to ask him for the details. So, I simply sit. He shifts in his chair. I hear Mara turn the page of her newspaper. Dupree, he can't help himself. He places the glass back on the table and stares me in the eye. Their necks were slit, practically, from ear to ear. He looks for me to react. I give him nothing. He shifts his weight. I make him uncomfortable, no? But even that small detail would not be interesting if it wasn't for one other fact, Jean-Pierre. You see, while there should have been an enormous amount of blood at the crime scene, there was barely a drop to be found. He raises his eyebrows, waiting for a response. But still I had to give him nothing. He shrugs his shoulders. Well, I found it interesting at any rate. He pushes back his chair. Good day, Jean-Pierre. Until next time. He flips over his empty glass, picks up the paper bag, and he walks away. I'm wondering whether I am indeed interested in this tidbit of information, as he calls it, but before I have time to think more on it, a shadow darkens my table.
Jean-Pierre, I was hoping I would find you here. Do you have a moment?
Says a familiar voice. I look up. It is Jules Beaumarchais. Jules has worked for me for quite some time. He started as a boy to run the errand, but he worked his way up through my organization to smuggle our good through Cairo, and now I am considering him with much seriousness to run our operation for the entire region of the Mediterranean. He is good with the details in an exceptional way, but sometimes he is challenged to see the, how do you say, big picture. And there is no question that he desires to do a job of much excellence for me, no? Before he began to work for me, he was a thief of wallets living in Paris. The law there finally caught up with him, so he moved here, to Tunis. As I say, it is the perfect city in which to disappear, no? So now, he works for me. If he does his job well, he gets paid well. If he fails me, he gets paid for his failure. One call on the telephone to Dupree and he goes back to Paris to face the consequences of having been a known criminal. Make no mistake, the gendarmes of Paris are no more friendly to criminals than the gendarmes of Tunis. So, it is a deal of most fairness for me, no? This deal with Jules Beaumarchais. But I am an employer of much patience and forgiveness. What is it, Jules? I say.
Jean-Pierre, we have a problem.
Of this I am certain, for why else would you be here? I say. I smile at him and point to the chair. He sits.
Merci, Jean-Pierre.
He says. This politeness, it gives away his fear, huh? And I do not wish him to be afraid. Jules, please take a breath. Would you like something to drink? Coffee? Tea? Something stronger?
Whiskey, s'il vous plaît.
He says. I raise one hand and look toward the bar. Mara, whiskey for my friend here, please, and coffee for me. Mara closes her newspaper and tends to her drinks. Tell me, what is on your mind, Jules?
The last shipment of salt.
The look of fear. It grows stronger in his eyes. I wait for him to continue.
It is missing,
he says. It is missing, I say. I am calm. Because raising your voice, no matter who is right or who is wrong, it makes you into the bad guy, no? And there is no power when you are the bad guy.
It's missing,
he says. His hand is shaking. He puts it on his lap so I cannot see it. How is it missing, I say.
We don't know.
Was it stolen, I say.
We don't know.
Who is this we, I say.
I,
he says.
I don't know.
So,
I say. It just disappears like that. I snap my fingers. He jumps at the sound. He looks at something on the table. Tell me, I say, leaning forward a little to speak in confidence. This last shipment of salt, it was what? 3 tons?
5 tons, sir.
He says. He still does not look at my eyes. 5 tons? That is a lot of salt? He does not answer. How is it possible for 5 tons of salt to... Again, I snap my fingers, this time under his nose, for he is still looking at the table and not at me. Again, it jumps. How is it possible for 5 tons of salt to just... to disappear?
I don't know, sir. That's why I came to you.
Have you looked for it? I say.
We've made all the inquiries, right down the line. No one has heard anything. None of our missing salt has appeared on the market.
Who was in charge of this shipment?
The new guy, Alan.
Shu glances to his right toward Mara as she comes with the drinks. He is silent now, waiting for her to leave us in private. Mara sets down the coffee and the whiskey. Merci, Mara, I say. Jules, he still says nothing. Mara nods. I wink at her. She smiles a little and walks back to the bar. She is a little old for my usual taste, but she is still a beautiful woman. Okay, we are alone. Please, go on.
There's nothing else. That's it.
So let me understand. Our latest shipment of salt to where? Cairo?
Palestine, actually.
The new territory. Okay. Our latest shipment of salt to Palestine? A shipment that weighs 5 tons, that takes up more space than the inside of this tavern. This shipment has disappeared? Disappeared so completely that it is gone without a trace? He nods. How long ago was this? I say. He swallows.
2 weeks ago.
And you only come to me today?
I wanted to be sure that we had done everything we could before we came to you.
So you take 2 weeks to tell me? He says nothing. Did it not occur to you that in 2 weeks I could have had more people looking for it? He says nothing. Did it not occur to you that perhaps I could bring more resources, more intelligence to this matter? Did it not occur to you that by waiting 2 weeks, the trail might have gone cold? He says nothing. I say nothing. I wait until he finally raises his eyes from the table and looks into mine. Well, I say, find it.
But I need your help.
If you had come to me 2 weeks ago, perhaps I could have helped you. But now it is too late.
We've already looked.
This man, his problem is that he does not think before he speaks. You have 2 weeks.
And if we don't find it?
I pull my kubasa from my belt. The light, it glistens off its serrated edge. I flip it over in my hand. The 9-inch blade has a nice weight to it, no? Jules, he jumps back. There is dirt under one of my fingernails. I use the knife to pick it out from under the nail, as I say. I am sure you'll find it.
But...
Not but, I say. Go.
But we've already left.
Why are you still here? Leave. He stares at me. He still does not comprehend what I've said to him. I get up for using the WC. I am already thinking of who else I can promote to the level of managing my operation in the Mediterranean. By the time I return, Jules Beaumarchais and his problem, they will be gone. The day is over and I am in a mood of deep foulness. Yes, none of my people have been killed today, and that is a good thing, but the conversation this morning have played with my mind all day. The matters in the desert, the missing salt, it makes me to wonder why I bother. Rue de Lambert, my street. The electricity in Tunis, it is not so reliable, so tonight, outside my apartment building, the lights, they are not working. It is not the first time such a thing has happened, but it still takes me a moment to feel my way to fit my key into the lock. All I want to do is lie down and to fall asleep. The door, it is jammed on something. I push on it, but there is something caught at the bottom that will not allow it to move. I throw my weight against the door, and the thing under is slowly pushed away enough for the door's opening to allow me through. What is that smell? Sulfur? My foot crunches against broken glass. Of course, the electricity, it is not out. It is the light bulbs. They have been broken. I pull a match from my pocket and strike it against the inside of the door frame. The thing caught under the door is a small piece of wood from my dresser. The small flame illuminates my apartment. Dresser destroyed, mattress unstuffed, clothing everywhere, broken glass and dishes. But no person. That I can see. Have they gone? Or are they like me, hiding in the shadows? The flame of the match, it burns the tip of my finger. I drop it, it goes out. Total darkness. The smell of sulfur lingers in the air, burning my nostrils. Do not move. Wait. Wait. I hear it. From the corner of the room. The heartbeat of a man.